Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hello, guys. It's Phil Hendry. And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where truth is our bitch, and we're here till 1 on the Pacific Coast. We're here till 4 out there on the East Coast, and in-betweensers, you can do whatever you want. You can figure all that stuff out, you know?
Yeah, and get Central Time probably be earlier, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to go into it. I think they can figure it out.
Yeah, but, well, can they?
Yeah, they could probably figure it out. So if we end at 1 o'clock on the West Coast, we're ending at 2 on the mountainside, 3 on the central thing, and 4 on the eastern thing.
What about Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia is Atlantic time. That would be 5. Do we have an affiliate in Nova Scotia?
I don't know. Do we, bud?
I'll look it up, Mr. Henry, see if there's a Nova Scotia affiliate.
Yeah, you do that, man. Although I could probably tell you right now, no, we don't. But do we have anybody in Halifax? Do we have anybody in Halifax just representing us? Do we have anybody in Halifax that loves us? You don't have to be listening, and you don't even have to know me, but do we just have somebody who's got our back in Halifax? In other words, if my private Piper Club crashed in Halifax, Canada.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying that if I was flying over Halifax, Canada, and my plane crashed, does anybody in that town care whether I live or whether I die?
Yay.
Thank you.
Well, I don't believe you, and you're smiling, you're laughing. I'd like the audience to know he's laughing. He's going, you think you got one over on people, huh?
No, I'm just asking. I think it would be very interesting. One time I was asking people, give us a call wherever you are, tell us where you're at, and call us and tell us what's up. And we got calls from Bombay, India, Japan, Sweden, and not that it was surprising because the internet will, you know, go all over the world, but I was curious because one of our most loyal fans was a cat in Bangalore, India. He was a, you guessed it, a tech guy.
One of those guys goes, yeah, hello, American Airlines, may I help you?
Yeah, okay, bud, you know.
Oh, I'm going to say like that, man. Yeah, it is. That's what they do.
We know, man.
Would you tell him, don't yell, bud.
Why?
Because you're going, why?
You know, it's right in my ear. I got her in my right ear and you in my left ear, okay?
I'm not in your ear.
Yeah, you are with your big fat mouth. So shut up. God, you're blah, blah. So.
Anyway.
God. So, yeah, we had a cat who was a big fan of ours in Bangalore, India.
I'd appreciate if you'd watch the way you say that, please.
What?
You're saying Bangalore. I know it's a real place, but you're saying Bangalore. Never mind. Phil, you can say what you want. I don't want to be disrespected as a woman, and I'm speaking for a lot of women.
Okay, there's a lot of women that are listening right now. Are you all offended by Bangalore, India, the name of, you know?
No, they probably are on account of what they say, bang. Yeah, if you go Bangalore, if you just say Bangalore.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't emphasize bang. I'll just say Bangalore.
That's why I do the French, because the French pronunciation does not allow you to, if you will, sewage or marinate in sewage the word.
Marinate in sewage?
Yes. So if you say Bangalore, like a witch, like, and my voice cracked on purpose, then it sounds as if you've marinated that word in filth. But if you say Bangalore, then it sounds acceptable.
Now let me ask you this question, Margaret. What if the people that live in that town call it Bangalore?
I can assure you I've known a great many Indian people. Do you know that Gandhi is from India?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Where did you hear that?
There was a whole movie about him.
Phil, don't be a... I know there was a movie. I'm wondering...
Bobby went and saw the movie.
I actually read a biography of Mahatma Gandhi when I was 13.
Oh, did you? Now, you know something? There's a lot of stuff you say you did when you were 13 that I don't believe, other than the fact... Well...
Other than the fact what?
You said you were masturbating.
Oh, well, thanks very much, Margaret.
You asked me.
You did, Mr. Hardy.
I didn't think she was going to... Anyway, welcome to the program, folks. 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Excuse me, I just hit a button that caused the zoom on our camera to literally just zero in on one pore of my nose. That was scary. You see that?
Yeah, all of a sudden it's just like an eyeball. Just went, woo! See that?
Yeah, I did, man. That like the Bill Cosby when he had the glasses.
That's a funny Bill Cosby. Not that I want to go back into ancient lore, but there is a Bill Cosby bit that's pretty funny where he talks about when he went and got his bifocals for the first time. You know this one, Margaret?
No.
Anyway, he didn't know how to use them because he's wearing these bifocals and he's also looking through a part of the glass that is not focused, that is not that magnified. So he sees the door, and then when he sees the bifocal, suddenly the... You got to hear the bit. It's suddenly just like right there, and the quarter is the size of the moon or so. I don't know. It was pretty funny. All right, tonight we are very happy to announce, not that we would be unhappy if the Spurs won, but we will tell you that the Miami Heat did win Game 7. LeBron James had a clutch three-point shot. I believe it was a three-pointer there with just seconds to go that pretty much iced it. He had 37 points. He had 5 three-pointers, 15 points. He had, I don't know how many boards. Did he have 12 boards, something like that? He had one hell of a game. He came through. He did what he was brought to Miami to do. He was a leader. He was a clutch player. He promised championships. This is now two, and is delivering. And while he will probably always take, people never get off their, sports fans are the most habitual people in the world. When a sports fan hates you, even if you go out and you break every known record, if you go out and you break Barry Bonds' home run record, and then you go out and you break Wilt Chamberlain's scoring record, and then you go out and you, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring record, then you go out and you beat Wayne Gretzky something. You could do it all, man, and they're still going to find a reason to sort of grudgingly admire you. They'll always go, well, he's gotten better. I'll admit that for him. He's gotten, but you know what? He's still got the week. And LeBron James, I have a feeling, is always going to be taking a ton of heat, if you'll pardon the expression.
Ton of heat on a Miami Heat.
Oh, that's not, that laugh.
Watch it. He'll always be taking a ton of crap, because people just, nobody wants to be wrong.
Yeah, that's it, man. Nobody wanted to be wrong because they'd be wrong about LeBron James to say that he did come through. And everybody said he's doing a dog,
Yeah, they're talking about him mounting a dog. He didn't mount no dog.
Do you have to say mount the dog?
Yeah, that's pretty much,
What about cherry pick? I like cherry pick. And I think when it comes to basketball, I think cherry picking is a good one. I didn't watch the game. Was he cherry picking?
No, he didn't do any cherry picking. He was out there kicking ass and taking names. He was leading his team to a championship in Game 7. And this, of course, after the Game 6 fiasco, as described by those on the scene of the San Antonio Spurs, a team that should have, at least in the opinion of a few, a team that should have taken Game 6 and then would have won the championship. So, this has been a fascinating series, and the post-mortem on this thing, while LeBron James is going to be getting kudos, it will have more than its fair share, I think, of people savaging the San Antonio Spurs and the fact that they had it in their hands and they dropped it in the dirt.
Very good.
Thank you. Okay, cut. Greg Popovich will take a ton of grief for it, and I'm sure that the Spurs will spend the offseason, very, very disgusted with themselves. But if you're a sports fan and you've been on that end of things, and I have as a Laker fan, just going back to the days of the Lakers-Celtics when I was in high school, and I can remember sitting with a friend of mine. We were going into a party. It was our senior year in high school, and we were sitting listening to the final game of the Celtics and Lakers 69 when Don Nelson's shot hit the heel of the basket and went straight up in the air and came down and won it for the Celtics. And I could have just, I think I did spew in my friend's brand new Buick Riviera, which he was borrowing from his dad, which didn't have the cool rims, but he eventually did put the rims on it with the Chi-Chi balls.
Hey.
All right. All right, we'll be right back here, folks, with more post-mortem, not on the San Antonio Spurs or on the Miami Heat, but on Paula Deen. Paula Deen, we missed talking about Paula Deen last night. Paula Deen, Margaret Gray will be with us to do a little of her commentary on this specifically. And the N-word, it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Backstage passes, go grab one, go get it, go
Truth
love it, go jump it.
Truth is our bitch, the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, jump on a backstage pass and love on it.
maudlin here, but I was talking with the gang here during the break about, you know, we were talking about the San Antonio Spurs not able to put it away, obviously, the sixth game especially, and letting the Heat back in the door, and you know how it goes in sports. I mean, this is something that is it's a time-honored and shop-worn cliche all at the same time, which is, you know, if you let them back up off the mat, they're going to put you down. And that's what happened to the Spurs with the Heat. And you remember a lot of different things. You remember a lot of different games, a lot of different series. And one of the things that I remember was the American League Championship Series in 1986, the Angels and the Red Sox. The Angels, I believe, had, as a matter of fact, I'll look at this right now. The Angels had a 3-2 lead. They actually had a 3-1 lead. They led that series 3-1. Are you loving that? On October the 11th, they won the fourth game by a score of 4-3 in 11 innings, giving them a three. Am I right about that? 1-2-3. Yeah, giving them a 3-1 lead. All they needed was one more game. All they needed was one more game. The Red Sox. Now, this was 86, and this was the series, the eventual World Series, that was a disaster for the Red Sox. It was Billy Buckner, you know, the ball going through his legs, and the New York Mets win at first base.
Yeah, Buckner looked like a cripple.
He wasn't a cripple, man. If you ask Buckner, that guy was one of the best players going.
Billy Buck, I know all about Billy Baseball, all right? Billy Buck didn't get down for, you've got to get down, okay? You've got to almost go down on one knee. Put the glove down on the ground.
Look, Margaret, this isn't Little League, all right? You know, these are Major League professional players.
But I don't care. Are you trying to tell me?
Where did you learn about baseball?
I played baseball, and my father managed baseball, and I was a ball girl, if you'll pardon the expression. I never liked the description.
You're the ball girl.
Don't overwork that phrase. Yes, I was the ball girl. I'll kick his...
Hey!
You've got to get down on one knee, drop the glove to the ground. The ball... Watch the ball into the glove.
He's a major league player.
Really? Did he catch the ball?
No, he did not.
Thank you.
He was injured. He was injured. He had bad knees. He had bad ankles.
Bad ankles. Let me see. Last time I checked, you don't catch a ball with your ankle.
Oh! God! So anyway, in one of the most tragic of all eventualities in any sporting contest, I believe it was in Game 5, I could be wrong, in came Donnie Moore, a relief pitcher. And Donnie Moore needed to get Dave Henderson out. And Donnie Moore was not able to get Dave Henderson out. Dave Henderson smacked the home run, essentially letting Boston back into the series, gave him the win, and poor Donnie Moore, a relief pitcher, good ball player, a good pitcher, just one of those guys that was slated by fate to be the guy on the mound as the ball sails over the wall. You know, I mean, how many of those guys have there been in the history of Major League Baseball? And some of them, you know, like Ralph Branca, you know, went on to actually... make a couple of bucks off of it. You know, he gave up the home run to Bobby Thompson, and they went out and they did a whole series of presentations, Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca, and the shot heard around the world, and Branca wound up making some money on it. That was not the case for Donnie Moore. He wound up committing suicide. And whether or not it was a direct result of that home run or whether it was a culmination of things, I think there was must have been a lot of depression there. But it was one of those just terribly... fated and just dark moments in baseball, at least if you were an Angel fan, and eventually for all of baseball when Donnie Moore took his own life. But it was a home run to Dave Henderson, and the Angels had a 3-1 lead, you know. So
you're saying Boston won the series?
Yeah, what do you think he's saying?
Don't talk to me like I pick up the garbage on Thursday morning, you little...
All right, take it easy, Mark. Yes, we're saying that Boston won the series.
Well, how am I supposed to know that?
I don't know. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that the Angel pitcher gave up a home run and then committed suicide, you know.
Well, maybe he... They could have won the game, and he still could. You know something? That reminds me of a story. Bill Wozzeszowski, do you remember him?
No.
No.
You don't?
No.
Boy, where have you guys been? He won the Greater Bowling Green Open, I think it was. Do you guys, you don't follow golf?
Not the Greater Bowling Green Open.
Oh, I see. So it's not big enough for you.
Margaret, I've never heard of it.
You know what? Why don't you guys get a clue? Bill Wozzeszowski won the Greater Bowling Green Championship, whatever it's called.
Open.
What is that?
That's what they call golf championships a lot of times.
He immediately went into his car and swallowed the barrel of a .38. And when they asked him later, why did you do it, he said, you know...
Wait, hold on for a minute.
Can I finish, please?
Wait, did he commit suicide?
Yes.
That's good. What? How's he going to be asked later?
May I finish, please?
Go ahead.
He went into his car, swallowed the barrel of a .38, and when they asked him later, why'd you do it, he said... It was a gag. I didn't know it was loaded. And then he died. There, does that answer your question?
God.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you, and I'm wondering whether that's a true story or not.
I never heard of it.
Well, you better... Am I a reporter?
Yes.
Then it's true. I'll get Frank on the line. As a matter of fact, we can get... not Don Bourbon. Who's the sports guy over there at the... Doug Dangert.
He's not a sports guy. I just want to know. Bill Wozzeszowski, or whatever the hell his name is.
It was something like, I don't know.
Okay. He wins the Greater Bowling Green Open, goes to his car.
What's he go to his car? Why don't he be on a TV and everything?
It wasn't covered by the TV. He won the tournament. He won the trophy. He got a check. He went to his car because he had to fit the big check into the car.
Yeah.
Well, what are you looking at?
He had to fit the big check... into the car.
Yes, they get... Oh, my God. You've never seen golf tournaments where they give you the big check.
I thought they give you a regular size check.
What do you mean they give you a regular...
Yeah, they give you a regular... They're going to show you a big check on account of going to be on TV.
Well, I don't know what any of you jackballs are talking about. They gave him a big check. And he went back to his car. Look at the butt on her, will you?
Margaret, you're a girl.
I don't... I can still admire a woman's ass. Very nice.
We're watching QVC. Anyway,
Yeah, so the large check, he's trying to fit it into the trunk of his car. He's trying to get it in the back seat. And that's where they think the gag went wrong, because he was supposed to pull the trigger on a blank, or it wasn't even loaded, and they're going to get a picture, and ha, 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 I'm only kidding. But somewhere between the time he couldn't get the check in the car and the time he put the barrel of the .38 in his mouth... Apparently, he got depressed enough to put a round in the chamber.
Why?
Because he couldn't get the check.
He couldn't get the check in the car.
So he did mean to kill himself.
Well, he might have blacked out or something. That's why he didn't really know. And when they finally said, was it a gag? He said, yes, and then he croaked.
You know what? If that's true, that's the weirdest story I've ever heard.
Yeah, bar none.
If it's true.
What does that mean, if it's true?
If it's true. That's exactly what it means, if it's true. The guy wins the Greater Bowling Green Open, goes to his car, can't fit the big check in, and gets depressed enough to stick a round in the chamber of the 38, a 38 that was going to be empty, and he...
So you're laughing at a man that blew... Oh.
No, I'm not. I just... It sounds to me like you're making fun of poor Donnie Moore.
I am. It's got nothing to do with him. I am not.
Oh, you're right. That girl does have a... I mean, so anyway, well, that's a wild story. That is definitely a wild story, Ed. All right, we're going to come back here with Paula Deen. We'll get off of sports and the tragedies, the triumphs, the bitter... What the hell do they call that? The...
The agony and the thrill of the victory.
The agony and thrill of victory.
No, man. The agony of defeat and the thrill of defeat.
You guys ought to be taken away and shot. The agony of defeat, the thrill of victory.
That's right. I'm sorry. The agony of defeat, the thrill of victory. Well, that may have a lot to do with Paula Deen.
I think so.
That's coming up next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
The Greater Bowling Green Open.
Call me a liar. Shame on you. Call me a liar twice. Shame on you. Shame on it.
I'm doing it.
Hendry.
Oh, bud, you slob.
What?
And it's red. Dude, you spilled your Red Bull all over this. I'm going to tell you something. If we spill any more Red Bull or anything else in this studio and it gets into this equipment, I'm going to commit homicide. You understand that, don't you?
Yeah, that's against the law.
I don't care if it's against the law. Ask me if I care. Ask me if I care if I go to jail. If you spill any more Red Bull in this studio, I'm going to kick your ass and take names later. I mean it. As sure as God made green apples.
Well, what is he doing in here with Red Bull?
I don't know. Why are you drinking that slop?
Because you do.
Oh, because I do, you have to.
Yeah, you're my idol, and you're also my, what you call, role model.
Why are you wiping that up with the elbow of your shirt?
Because that's the only thing I got. Man, why don't you go and get a napkin or something?
Go get some paper towels, you jackass.
What's wrong? Ow!
What a dork, man. He's wiping it up with the elbow of his shirt, and then he rammed his elbow into the table.
Yow! Yow!
Oh, quit faking it.
I'm not faking it. It hurts bad. Real bad.
You're not going to get any sympathy from me, man. Go get some towels. Clean that up. Look at that. It's soaking into the mouse pad. Ah, you dirty. See, what kind of Red Bull are you drinking? 10 calories. What a slob.
Well, that's better than the other kind.
What happened to that zero Red Bull you were drinking?
I had some Red Bull that was 0 calories, and it tasted like swill, but what are you going to do? Red Bull tastes, let's not kid ourselves. Red Bull tastes like you don't even want to know. Like you want to rip your nose, you want to rip your olfactory sense out. It is the funkiest thing. And dude, if you ever drink that stuff and it's not refrigerated.
Well, what moron would do that?
This one right here.
No, Mr. Aaron, you try to drink a Red Bull, try to bring it with no refrigeration?
Robert, Robert, are you?
No, I don't have nothing in my mouth.
All right, because you're going.
Am I doing what?
Are you drinking that without refrigeration?
Sometimes, one time I did, because it hadn't been refrigerated. I drank a Red Bull without refrigeration, and it tasted like doo-doo. Oh, God, was it funky. All right, let's move on, shall we, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have this story about, it was yesterday the story broke on Paula Deen. Very, very weird. And I know, Margaret, you're going to do the bulk of the reporting on this thing, but I just wanted to give people a little bit of background. Apparently, in a deposition taking of Ms. Deen by attorneys representing an individual that is suing her, she admitted to using the N-word. I don't know whether this is a major controversy or not. I personally always find it interesting to know who the people are and what they still believe. And I think the use of the N-word among whites is whether they're using it just among them other whites or whether they use it with black people. I imagine if you're white and you call a black person the N-word, you are asking for violence. I mean, I just have to believe that. If you don't understand that, then you are fatally stupid. However, I'm talking about whites that just use the N-word. It's interesting to me, who are these people that still use that word? There's a huge divide, I think, between them and others that get the hatefulness of it, the history of it, and its, you know, ramification and how it hits the ear of an African American as opposed to a white person, you know, and so on and so forth. So, Margaret?
Well, Paula Deen is a Southerner. Now, I don't know anything about this. I'm not from the South. I come from Pennsylvania. I'm an Easterner. So right away, I have to resist the temptation to feel a bit superior. And I'm not saying that I am. I think Paula Deen's been a wonderful success, a limited success, given what she is a success in.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, she's successful in the world of food. And if you come from the South and you're a large, shall we say, you're a fat female, if you want, my God, you better be good in the kitchen. You know, I mean, if you come from the South and you're female and you can't cook, it is almost mental disability, you know.
Yeah, maybe the physical kind.
You not hit the microphone, bud.
You almost hit me in the face, Buck.
Sorry.
like a mental disability.
Yes, it is almost a mental disability, bordering on spasms.
All right, I understand. So Paula Deen was what?
Paula Deen was in this deposition, as you said, and she admitted that she's used racial slurs in the past. Now, her camp has given a more in-depth explanation as to why. During a deposition where she swore to tell the truth, Ms. Deen recounted having used a racial epithet in the past, speaking largely about a time in American history which was quite different from today. She was born 60 years ago when America's South had schools that were segregated, different bathrooms, different restaurants, and Americans rode in different parts of the bus. This is not today. To be clear, Ms. Deen does not find acceptable the use of this term under any circumstance by anyone, nor condone any form of racism or discrimination. The celebrity chef and her brother are being sued for racial and sexual discrimination by Lisa Jackson, who worked as a manager at their restaurant. During a deposition in May, Jackson's lawyer asked Deen, 66, if she'd ever used the N-word. She said yes, frequently, especially when, quote, those coons don't... Oh,
give me that!
I read it wrong, I'm sorry.
Those coons.
She is... what I was doing there, Phil, and I wasn't doing what you do, which is to make it up for humor. I was paraphrasing and I was creating a historical dialogue... You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, 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 okay. It's like the novelization of history.
Yes.
Well, I don't think you should do that with a news story.
I was speculating. And if you speculate, this is something I know a little bit about, Phil, because I'm a journalist. It isn't just you sitting and reading your Hitler books and eating your Frito-Lays or whatever. It is me novelizing. So let's say that... this did take place. Paula Deen comes from a part of the country where it was very likely she said one day in her restaurant, boy, when you're done doing that, go get the rest of them coons. You know?
No, I do not know. No. First of all, I want to say this.
Please don't raise your voice.
Well, Margaret...
Please don't raise your voice at me.
Yeah, you shouldn't raise your voice at a lady or anything.
Oh, would you back it off? First of all, Margaret, let me say, I was born 60 years ago, okay?
You were born in California.
Hold on for a minute. You don't come of age, they say, until you don't come into consciousness of yourself and your surroundings until you're 7 or 8 or 9 years old. You're not really in the workforce until you're maybe 11, 12, 13. You're certainly not in a professional work environment until you're out of high school, and you're not in any position to be the supervisor of people, most likely until your late teens or early 20s, and then overall boss, the owner of a company, until maybe your late 20s, early 30s, if you're really a successful and motivated person. So what I'm saying is, by the time Paula Deen was running a restaurant, America had changed quite a bit. It would have been the 1980s. I turned 30 the same year that Paula Deen did, 1982. And it was a decidedly different country. We'd had civil rights. I'm not saying that everybody was squeaky clean, and we didn't have a black president. We would not have another. We would not have a black president for another 26 years. But the fact is, the country had changed and moved past the 60s of the Ku Klux Klan and the civil rights demonstrations and civil rights legislation. What I'm trying to say is, when this guy says this woman was born in a different time, yes, she was born in a different time. As I was. I was born in the 50s, too. But we were not out strolling around with cigars in our kissers at the age of 4 going,
hey, look at that coon over there.
Oh, you're trying to be funny now.
Pretty fun, Mr. Henry.
I'm just saying, you know.
So you think a little tiny baby is walking around saying filth like that?
No, but you do.
No, I do not.
Yeah, because you're saying, well, 60 years ago, Paula Deen would have been a little 4-year-old girl... When Montgomery went down, when Rosa Parks and the civil rights movement was really sparked during the Montgomery bus boycott, and Rosa Parks taking the seat in the front of the bus, that was what, 56? So
about 1960 or something.
No, it was not. It was 1956.
I don't think you're right about that. I think it's closer to what Bud was saying.
No, well, I am right. You're wrong. Look it up.
Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia, too.
Look it up on, what do they call, Wikipedia?
Wikipedia!
Boy, look at you getting all pissed off. What's your problem?
My problem is when you don't know your history and then you use stupid dates And
I'm not stupid, Phil.
All right, then let's use the right dates. She would have been four. I was 4 years old when the civil rights movement was getting its, you know, when they were fire hosing people on the bridge there in Selma. I was 10, 9 or 10 years old. So was she. When the civil rights legislation was signed, I was 12 or 13. When the riots broke out, I was in my early teens. We were not adults, Paula Deen and I. So when she finally got out into the workplace and starts throwing around the N-word, it's a different time. So I don't know if that's really a defense of her. However, I will say it was not contemporary, and it was not the times we live in today. In a statement to ABC News, her lawyer, Bill Franklin, said Deen does not condone or find the use of racial epithets acceptable. Meanwhile, the Food Network, which broadcasts two of her shows, has made it clear where they stand on the issue. Food Network does not tolerate any form of discrimination and is a strong proponent of diversity and inclusion. We will no longer, listen to this, we will no longer consider airing the new program that would be produced by Paula Deen entitled My Favorite N-Word Food, Greens and More, which was scheduled for... No, I'm kidding.
You can't kid about that stuff.
Phil, you don't want me to kid.
I don't want you to kid.
I wasn't kidding.
That would be great if they had a show like that.
Man, I don't know, man. My favorite N-word food.
Well, we know. Hi, I'm Paula Deen, and here's my here's my favorite food made by, you know... All right, we've got Professor Emery Clayton is going to join us to talk about this. Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College. He is a professor of urban studies, and we will be talking with the good professor when we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Peace. Here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, we have with us Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College, who joins us this evening from Chefs, a nightclub in Northern California. He's been invited to watch Emerelda Wheeler, and Deen, I guess, has got everybody up seeing his talented wife, Professor.
It's a very interesting night tonight, Bill, because Deen asked me to come up and to watch his wife singing. I have heard her before. He said she'd gotten better, and that's not for me to say. I don't want to yell too much, but the first time I heard her, I was not impressed. You know what I said, that Deen.
I do remember that, but I think you're going to really enjoy it.
But I'm not going to keep my voice muted.
Okay, just so long as you don't get too distracted, because I know the singing does distract Deen.
I understand that, Deen. If you could move away from me, or I'll move away from you, that's all right.
I'd appreciate that. I have to watch my wife. I wanted to make eye contact.
I understand it. Phil, to the point that you are making this evening, I have been a teacher, and I have been I've been a mentor of young people for quite a number of years. That's a terrible horn. That's a terrible horn, man. Terrible horn, man.
I don't like it at all.
Terrible horn, man, Phil. I'm sorry I had to...
You know, this horn player...
Phil, don't start.
No, it's just every time I get on the air and your wife is singing, the horn player messes everything up.
I'm sorry, Phil. I should not have said anything. I am trying to be mindful of what the topic is tonight, but the horn, man, that cat cannot blow that thing with any semblance of decency. You know what I'm saying, Deen?
I understand.
You've got to be able to blow that horn in a decent way, with a semblance of some commonality and decency. A man that blows a horn the way that man's blowing that horn, come blow your horn, you know. But I
understand completely.
All right, Phil, but to get back to what we're talking about...
Let me see if I can't direct this a little bit. We're talking about Paula Deen. Now, tell me, in your opinion, you're an African-American, she's white. Let's get it right. I know you probably would tend more to think that she's just a racist, right?
Well, not necessarily. What I would say is this. We have an undereducated class, especially of generational. This lady is a part of my generation, of your generation. She is a white, She comes from a class of whites that tend to be undereducated. I'm not saying that Paula Deen is not an intelligent woman, but I am saying that I can tell by looking at her she did not have education. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that when you look at some white women, the weight that they have on them, the girth, bespeaks a life of idleness or a life that has been spent not just working in a kitchen, but directing others below you. In a kitchen, because if you have that much weight on, and I say that with the greatest of respect, she's not a bad-looking woman, you're obviously spending more time sticking your hand in a bowl here, going into the icebox and grabbing some. In other words, you're grazing, and you're not working. So Paula Deen got that weight while she was directing blacks that work under her and saying to them, now you, and I'm not saying she said this, but in her mind, she's thinking, you, black number one, you go over to black number two, and you oil that up, oil up that biscuit platter, because I want that biscuit platter oiled up. Now I'm going to go over half one of the biscuits that you just made, and then I will direct black number four, and so on and so forth.
So in other words, what you're saying is she's directing all of these people of color who are working underneath her, and which gives her kind of an entitled feeling?
I would say yes.
And then she's also grazing the food.
Yeah, if she's saying, go grease up a skillet. And you have to understand, there is, as an African-American man, coming from that era where sex between a black and a white was forbidden, and you heard a white woman say to you, go grease the skillet, you got nervous. I know I got nervous. I began to sweat and began to shake because I'm thinking, what does this woman want from me now?
Well, Emery, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not quite clear what you mean. So if she would have said to you, go grease a skillet...
You could be on the receiving end of a request for you to take off your apron and repair to a toilet or to some private closet or room and get it going, get it ready. Get yourself ready for, you know, who knows what we used to call a slip and slide, a grease lightning. And
well, what is that? Are you talking about sex, illicit sex?
Well, you want to call it illicit.
Well, if you're in a closet, in other words, you're hiding it from people.
Yeah, it's secret, right. But it was, again, in those days, it was...
Now, when you said go grease a skillet...
That was code, yeah.
Paula Deen is a very upstanding... You're not saying that she would...
I don't know. If she's using the N-word and she's saying, hey, boy... Go grease a skillet. That young man is going to be nervous. He's going to, he may go out, excuse me for saying this, but when you got a woman that looks like Paula Deen, and she's licking her lips telling you to go grease a skillet, you might as well go out. Well, I better not. I shouldn't say this, Mr. Henry, but I swear to Almighty God, God forgive me for saying this, I'd go out and I'd lynch myself. And
oh, God!
I'm just saying, if that's what Paula Deen... was
good Lord, what an image.
I forgive me, I shouldn't have said that, but I'm telling you, if that's what a white woman had in mind for me, that's all I'm trying to say.
No, Phil, I think you're in. You better just tell him to...
Excuse me, don't talk. Are you talking about me?
Yeah, we are, Professor. We're talking about you. Yeah, we'll be right with you.
Whoa, hold on there, Dickman. You're the lowest of the low. You're like the intern, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, you don't talk to... You don't tell me. You don't direct me. I want Mr. Henry to direct me.
Yeah, but sir, we're not talking behind your back. I would like you to be involved in this, Professor Clayton. I think you need to apologize for what you just said.
All right, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used that term, but I can tell you it does make you nervous.
Because that was... That was wrong, and that was very, very...
I'm sorry, okay? I'm saying I'm sorry. I am sorry. I'm not sorry for being me. I'm not sorry for the things I think, but I'm sorry so that you don't feel nervous and start wetting yourself or whatever you people do.
I'm not wetting myself. I'm just thinking of my audience.
Well, you know something, Phil? Paula Deen's the one that said the N-word, not me. Paula Deen's the one that said, hey, boy... Go grease up a skillet.
What is it with you and hey, boy? You know, how do you know she's saying it like that?
Because that is the Southern way. If you've got an accent, you're white, it comes out like that. See, if you're black and you say boy, that just sounds like boy. You know, because black people have a certain accent. White people say boy. That comes out loud. It comes out like a percussive explosion. I wish I had Dr. Kendler here. He is our speech teacher at L.A. Canyon. And Dr. Kendler could describe for you the percussive, concussive boy that if I could get him, boy, I'd love to get him on the line. God, I'd do anything. I would sink to any depravity to get Dr. Kendall on the line.
Well, let's see if we can get Dr. Kendall on the line. We're coming up against the hour. We're going to have to reset the topic when we come back. We'll talk about Paula Deen with Professor Emery Clayton. We'll have Dr. Kendall, the speech doctor.
Yeah, he's a speech. That means he's not a doctor that fixes your tongue. He teaches you how to talk like people can understand you.
Yeah, in case you can't talk good.
Right.
All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
So, are you going to keep him on the air?
Yeah.
I don't want him on the air.
Hey, boy. Come here.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. If you're joining us on Phil TV and HD, if you're one of our Backstage Pass subscribers, I clicked over here on our camera, on our internet camera. I clicked over through our home movies because we've been talking about sports and baseball. And then during the break, I was looking at some old baseball clips, and I said, geez, you know, on our home movies, my dad took home movies of a Dodger game he took me and my brother to at the Coliseum. And
now, you're talking the L.A. Coliseum. They had baseball there?
Yeah, that's where the Dodgers played when they first got to town. And I was going to show it to Dan, but I haven't. But what's on here now is kind of a curious thing. I can show it to you guys that are at home watching. That's me beating a drum, leading a parade of kids.
Beating a what?
A drum, okay?
He said drum.
Leading a parade of kids. It's my fourth birthday party. And I've got a hat and I've got a drum and there's a parade of kids behind me. And I asked my dad, you know, I asked my dad later because apparently this was his idea, you know. I said, why was I beating that drum? He goes, you know, because you know how your dad and your mom, it all makes sense to them. He's, well, it was your fourth birthday, you know, you're beating it. Hey, it's my birthday. You know, you're announcing it to the world. Oh, okay. I don't know.
What? That's the goofiest thing I ever heard.
Well, it was my dad's idea, you know.
Well, so you're beating on your... I didn't hear it. You're beating your what?
The drum, Margaret.
I don't know. I don't know what kind of family you are. I know your parents are good people, but I don't know what...
It was a drum. And so anyway, this is our whole movies. If you have a Backstage Pass to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show website, you can see these are very, very special memories of my family, and you, my BSPs, are treated to these family memories.
Yeah, but you're beating a drum.
It's just the term. That's all that we object to.
You know, you guys have got the filthiest minds.
I do. You're the one, Phil, every night you pull your brain out of a Petri dish that in it somebody went.
What are you laughing about?
I'm not laughing.
So it's my fault. I didn't say anything other than these are my home movies of my family, and you guys are all worried because I'm beating a drum, and that may send the wrong that may send the wrong message.
Well, you're laughing.
Well, because it's absurd. It's absurd. So yeah, if you get our see, there's my sister Joanne. That's Lake Arrowhead. It was freezing cold, and oh yeah, there's all kinds of stuff there. That there's a look at that two-tone Cadillac. That was my dad's.
Mr. Henry, people can't see this on a radio.
You're right. All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. On the line with me is Professor Emery Clayton. We also have... now, what happened, bud?
I was not able to get Professor Clayton. Are you there?
I am here, bud. You said you were not able to get Professor Clayton. Obviously, I'm here.
No, I didn't mean Professor Clayton. I meant I was not able to get Professor Kendall.
You were not able to get our speech professor from L.A. Canyon. Professor Kendall told me, he assured me, that he'd be in his office tonight.
Well, I wasn't able to do it, but I did get Warren Benman, who could be on it.
Warren Benman? What's he got to do with speech?
He assures me, and he assures me even more, that he does.
I don't care what he assures you of.
Well, look, Phil, it's worth a shot. I don't know who this man Benman is. but I think it's worth a shot.
Let me just get him on here. Yeah, Warren? Yeah, you're going to be on with Professor Emery Clayton and another guy is Phil, and the other guy is Phil Henry, but you've talked to him. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Warren, do you know about speech?
Well, Mr. Henry, good. What, is this some kind of a gag here? Oh, no, I just want to tell him, Professor Clayton, I got to be the speech therapy.
Yeah, see, at speech therapy, on account he fell off that girder and hit his head all the way down.
I'm going to say, Emerald Wheeler, the horn player. Did I hear somebody mention my wife?
Hold on. Everybody, just hold on. All right, Warren, do you know anything about speech?
I said, but I had speech therapy.
I know you've had speech therapy, okay?
Oh, this is some kind of a gag, Henry. Let me tell you something, Henry, you're wasting my time. If this is some kind of a gag, I can assure you I'll be on the phone to my attorney.
Hold on for a minute. No, it's not a... I didn't pull this gag, okay?
I ain't pulling no gag neither. Tell him, Warren.
Yeah, I had speech therapy one time. All right, listen. Well, Mr. Benman, is that it?
Yes, my name's Poor Benman.
All right, Mr. Benman, if you've had speech therapy, how come you sound like you've got your finger shoved in a wall socket?
Because I fell off a girder.
You fell off a girder? Well, there's no harm in falling off a girder. You could fall off a girder and land on a marshmallow. Fall off a girder and land on a fat lady's belly. Sounds to me like you... forget it. Let me have the phone here. I can handle this. Dean Wheeler, Phil.
Dean, how you doing?
Well, I was doing fine. My wife is on stage doing her second set. I'm enduring this horn player, and I'm hearing a TV set.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wheeler. That's my TV.
My name is not Mr. Wheeler. It's Mr. Wheeler. I know that you have a speech problem. Where does this speech problem emanate from?
What's that?
Where does your speech problem emanate from?
What do you mean, emanate?
Where did it start? Where did it,
Well, I fell off when I was changing a light bulb on Radio Tower. Then I fell down, my head hit on the car, got on the girder.
Oh.
Yeah, his head hit every girder on the way down.
Yeah, that was kind of what they said.
What do you mean it's what they said? Aren't you familiar with, Let me take this over, okay? If you're trying to tell me that this man knows something about speech there. All right, let me ask you something then, Mr. Benman, because what we're talking about here are the percussive and concussive sounds of Southerners who say the word boy, you know? Now, I'm black. I don't say it like that.
Well, yeah, because I say a lot of time, you told me the boy.
You used to say it all the time, is that right?
Yeah, but now if I hit the girder and I had speech there, don't say it.
You don't say boy after you hit a girder. Well, I'll tell you what, if that cures you of saying the word boy, I hope every white man listening to me right now fall off a broadcast tower and hit his head on a girder all the way down.
I don't know. It sounds like a good... I'm a liberal, of course. I would endorse that. But I just don't know. I can't be sure. I can't be sure of anything.
Okay, Dean, why don't you go back and watch Emeralda, okay?
I think I will. Thank you very much. It seems far more preferable than being on your show tonight. I can generally, I just went to state. That when I had a speech therapy, we had a guy who was my speech therapist, used the N-word all the time, and said, why don't you still get out of here?
He did what?
Bad man named Kendall.
Now, you're not trying to tell me that Dr. Kendall, the eminent professor that works with me at L.A. Canyon College, was your speech therapist.
I was.
And he was telling, what did he say? You stove lids get out of here.
Yeah, he was chasing the kids out of the thing.
So this guy Kendall's a racist.
Yeah, but it's damn good speech therapy.
Let me be the judge of that, man, because if you think it's damn good speech therapy, I can barely understand anything you're saying. I bet you were clear right after you fell off that thing and hit a girder. Now I can't understand you for love of money. And you're telling me that Kendall, by that dirty no good...
All right, now hold on. Warren, thank you very much. I didn't mean to bother you. I don't think you're really the guy to talk to.
I thought you did a pretty good job, Warren. That's good.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mr. Henry.
I mean, goodbye. Would you cut his line off, bud? You're always leaving people's lines open. Okay, so, Professor Clayton, I apologize for that.
Well, that's all right, Henry, because I got to tell you something. I don't mean to say anything, but every time I'm on your program, you guys are pulling some gag. I understand the need for mirth. I understand the need for kicks. I need my kicks. I don't think this man out there don't need no kick. But I'll tell you something, I come on your program and you try to make a monkey out of me with all this Warren Benman, a guy hitting a girder and talking like he's got his not just his finger, but every appendage, including...
You're pointing.
Of course I'm pointing. And I'll tell you what, put that in a wall socket, and friend, you're going to sound like about 1,600 different shades of Frankie Fontaine. I'm going to just simply say this. I've got to listen to this broad.
Do you mind keeping your voice down? You're talking really loudly.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot I was in the nightclub, Phil. I tried to black out this lady. I think she's a great singer, but the horn player is going to be the death of everyone in this club. But I say, Phil, you've done your duty for God and country, but the whole thing blows ape. Thank you. I'm Emery Clayton.
Well,
that was very elucidating, wasn't it? Not.
No, it was not. I don't know what we proved there, other than Paula Deen. The only thing I got out of that, and we spent 15 minutes trying to figure it out, was that Paula Deen, because she's from the South, says the word boy in a more percussive way.
Yeah, because you're a boy.
Will you what? Not in my ear, bud. God,
man, how many times I got to tell you that?
Sorry.
But we aren't really sure. All right, so the deposition will continue, the trial will continue, and the whole ding-dang thing will continue, and we'll figure out what's going on. Mara, we'll be right back at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, and philhendryshow.com, but what else we got?
Candy Crush Saga, they consider going public.
Whatever. Candy Crush Saga. I only know this game because people keep asking me, do I want to play it on Facebook? Dumb and Dumber 2, by the way, is going forward. Remember the other night we were talking about how the whole thing stunk to high heaven? Well, guess what? No, it doesn't. And the Miami Heat repeat as NBA champions. All ahead here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Right now on Phil TV, we have the Phil Hendry Home Movies going. That's the Coliseum. Now, my father took that footage. You can see we're off of the third baseline, pretty high up. But there is an actual ball game at the Coliseum. And for those of you who remember the old days of the Coliseum, when they had the clock, not a digital, but an actual analog clock there in the end zone, and what they call the peristyle end, where the torch was. But look at the expanse. And then they had what they called, in left field, they had the screen to avoid what were called moon shots, because Wally Moon was a hitter that mastered the art of popping that ball up in the air and hitting these home runs over the screen in left field, and they called them moon shots. I think this was the Cincinnati Reds. I can't remember. And pretty interesting, huh?
So that was isn't that charming? And now let me ask you, Phil, about the little Native American boy. You were saying...
Okay, that was a piece of footage that my dad shot. This was on a trip to... By the way, everything that we were looking at on Phil TV of the home movies, folks, these were images taken during a trip back to Toronto, Canada to see my family, to see my in-laws, to see my grandparents and my cousins, okay?
These are the same people you went and gotten seen the other time?
Yeah, 2 years ago when I went back to see my cousins, only they're now, you know, much, much older and married with kids and all this stuff. But back then, they were little kids. So we went back. This is the trip that I got into radio on. I was only five, but I would listen to the radio as my dad was driving overnight.
So this was the actual trip?
Yeah. If we hadn't gone back to Canada, I never would have been leaning on the back seat, listening to the radio and talking to my dad, and I would have been spared a lifetime of misery and...
Oh,
I'm kidding. Sort of. Just imagine if we'd taken a trip where there was a television. You know, that would have been so much. Anyway, so yeah, that was it. But there was, you're asking me about that Nebraska.
Yeah, it's like an Indian.
Looked like it was like a trading post. You know, like they had old days of trading post.
Yeah, see that.
I'm going to do it, man. They had old days of a trading post. And you go in and trade, and the Indian will give you like a scalp or something.
That wouldn't give you a scalp. He would give you whatever Indians gave you. What did they have?
Well, they had corn and, you know.
Corn?
Yeah, corn. The Indian people, the native people in North America, were masters at these crops that we hadn't even heard of as Europeans. So that was a trading post of some kind. Dan and I were just talking. He says, man, you don't see those places anymore.
Well, of course you don't, Phil, because we're an enlightened people.
Well, guess what? That was run by Native Americans. What do you mean enlightened?
Oh, that was on a... Oh, yeah, that was in a concentration camp.
Not a a reservation.
Well, what's the difference?
Oh, please. I don't want to get into some heavy conversation right now. The point is, it was a trading post that was operated by Native Americans. The highway ran by it. So we pulled off, as good 1950s Americans would. You know, if you were in the 50s and your father wore, you know, chinos and drove a convertible, he'd say, hey, look, there's an Indian trading post. And so, you know, my dad did that. And
Who was operating the camera, your mother?
Yeah.
Was she wearing heels?
I don't know.
Was she in a skirt?
I don't know.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. I'm sure she was. That's the way women dressed in those days. Very elegant, very classy.
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, you would go down to the store, you'd be in a dress. But anyway...
What do you mean you'd be in a dress?
You didn't wear a dress.
Not me, my mother. Oh, God, man, are you people crazy?
Phil, let the record show, you said when you went to the store, you put on a dress.
You did, Miss Henry.
No, I didn't. When I went to the store, I put a dress, what, when I was six?
You said your sister dressed you up, and you let her. And that'll forever be on your record, man.
Oh, well, I just feel bad about that.
Well, it is something that people kind of get your goat over, isn't it?
I don't care. I don't give a damn.
You thought about me sister dressed you up like a girl?
Yeah. I was a little tiny kid. What am I supposed to do?
You could have done something about it. You could have at least protested, but instead you went ahead and let her do it.
Oh, is that right? I'm 3 years old and I got my sisters dressing me up like a chick and putting lipstick on. What am I supposed to do?
You could have fought them.
Yeah, you could have swung on them or something.
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys that fight until they're just knocked out in prison.
What are you talking about?
I said there's guys that won't go down easy in prison.
This wasn't prison rape. These are my sisters dressing me up in a little hat with lipstick, and I'm three.
Still, Mr. Henry, there are guys that will be knocked out cold and even go to the hospital to fight off guys in the shower at prison.
Will you knock it off with the prison stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in any event... that was my my ute, and you can see it all there on philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. All right, where else are we going? Candy Crush Saga. I don't know, man. I Facebook is fun. We have our fan page, which, by the way, we're over there at facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS. The Candy Crush, what are you looking at him for?
No, we're just, nothing.
Yeah.
No. What's going on here, okay?
I wanted Bud to go to my car and get a pair of high heels.
And do what?
Why don't I see if you put them on so we can get a picture for the webpage?
No. No.
Well, it's a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea.
Phil, just for the webpage, say, oh, look at this. Here's Phil poking fun at his rather shaky beginnings. You know, he's in a fur and a skirt.
And what does that mean, my shaky beginnings?
Well, your identity... The identification of the orientation toward femaleism.
The identification of the orientation toward femaleism. You know, Bud, you are a monstrous moron, you know, because that's not even approaching what goes on in the real world.
Well, it's orientation, right?
Yes, which you have from birth.
Yeah, but you made a decision when you were three to dress up.
Are you trying to tell me that was me trying to be gay or something?
Well, I mean,
we don't know. We're kicking it around.
You know, Margaret, you know better, and I know you're putting these guys up to this bullcrap.
I've got better things to do, Phil.
No, don't act outraged. You know better than that. And what do you mean I made a choice at the age of three?
To dress up. You did make a choice.
When you're 3 years old, man, you got no choice. When your older brother and your older sister and whoever...
Oh, now your older brother. You're going to drag him into it.
No, I'm not. He didn't do anything. When your older sisters... You know what? I shouldn't even have to explain it. When your older sisters take you at the age of three and stick you in a lady's hat and put lipstick on you, you got nothing to say about it, friend. Let me tell you.
Well...
Yeah, I know. There's guys that fight to the death in prison. All right, so... Candy Crush Saga, the popular mobile game, could launch its King.com toward an IPO. Well, how about that? But as Zynga can attest, the risks are aplenty. King.com, the software developer behind the hit game Candy Crush Saga, is preparing for an initial public offering. Can't wait to see how this one goes. Bloomberg reports that King, a multinational company with offices in Europe and the U.S., is working with J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and Bank of America on the IPO. So this is a very, very popular game that's been kicking around Facebook for a long time. And guess what they're recommending? And I was just about to do it myself. Before you read anything about this Candy Crush Saga IPO, read about the they go recommended reading, Facebook IPO.
Well, those guys, they mounted the pooch and didn't get off.
Yeah, they rode the dog.
Okay. Six key dates in the debacle of the Facebook IPO. The banks declined to comment to Bloomberg, but in a statement to the Wall Street Journal, a spokesman for King acknowledged the company was mulling the possibility. Nothing going to get that stock price going in the direction you want it to, sir, than by, Wall Street Journal saying, oh, and by the way, remember the Facebook IPO?
Well, then I don't think it's the same thing. Facebook tanked their initial public offering because they did not have a platform for the advertising.
Well,
the advertising.
All right, Margaret. God, what are you singing it?
The advertising.
I understand. We'll be right back with more of this scintillating, not really, story. And Dumb and Dumber 2 is moving forward despite the fact that it was pronounced almost dead, almost stillborn last week. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
We're still looking at some. That's my mother and father at. We're looking at some home movies here, folks, on our website, philhendryshow.com. That's my mother and father at the University of Mexico. See that? That's a huge building there.
No kidding.
I know.
Phil, we know it's a building.
Yeah, I know, but I wanted to say that's a huge building. That tile mosaic at the University of Mexico is very famous. That's a very beautiful. And this is a bullfight.
My God, is that what I think it is?
That's a bullfight. Is that a real bullfight?
Yes, that's a bullfight.
And your father took moving pictures of the. That is abs. No, I won't watch it. Excuse me. Where are the bounty towels?
In the bathroom.
I'm not watching this.
Well, what are you doing, Margaret?
I'm not.
Well, you're standing there staring at it.
There's something compelling about it because of the Toreador, yes. Oh, God.
Oh, you're all turned on by the Toreador.
No, I am not that much.
You're all turned on about it. Ow!
Yeah, I don't want to watch the poor bull getting... So, yeah, my old man was into that stuff. So, anyway, check it out, philhendryshow.com. Now, getting back to some of this folderol that we were talking about. Yeah, Dumb and Dumber. And wanted to talk with Doug Danger about Dumb and Dumber 2. It is moving forward. It's only 17 years after the fact, but now Dumb and Dumber 2 is not only semi-officially in the early stages of pre-production, but the sequel could also be Bobby and Peter Farley's next directorial effort. And in order to sort of sort through this a little bit and figure out, what's what, who's who, and when's when, we want to bring on Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier to talk a little bit about this. Doug, I thought that this film had pretty much been passed on by Warner Brothers.
I did too, Phil, but apparently attaching the Farley Brothers' name to it has given it some life.
But I thought the Farleys were already attached to it.
Yeah, but I think what they did was they attached it more firmly. I think it was loosely attached. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. As you know, Phil, I want to let your audience know that I'm not just another film critic. I'm not just another guy that, whatever some of these film critics that you see talking about movies. I'm the real deal. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Now,
What's that? Well, you got to tell people that means.
What's that?
You got to tell people what that means.
I don't have to tell nobody nothing. Dickman, let me do what I'm doing.
All right, hold on. When you say you're a gay man and a gay journalist...
What that means is that I've come up a tough, long, hard road of discrimination, Phil. I came out of the closet 6 weeks ago, and since that time I've seen how people react to me and to the other gays in my community. So you can't lie to me. I read through all of that horse dung, and because I'm able to read through all the horse dung, I can properly appraise the story as a gay man and as a gay journalist. And I'm here to tell you that the Farley brothers might have been attached to Dumb and Dumber 2, but they were not so firmly attached that Warner Brothers was saying, all right, well, let's go for it. I think they needed to get cinched in tighter, and Warner Brothers felt good about it, so they firmed it up.
How do you firm it up? Were they not just
Well, they were under contract. There's no question about that.
So yeah, so if they're under contract,
No, you just firm it up. You don't really. There's nothing more you need to do contractually, but I think you need to just have them in for some visits, drinks. I don't know. Have them to the house, something like that. I think maybe the Farleys. Maybe the Farleys demanded that. Maybe their agent demanded that. Maybe the head of the studio over there, who was ever in charge of developing this film, maybe they demanded that the Farleys be cinched in tighter.
That doesn't mean anything about money. It's just have them over for drinks.
Just have them over for breakfast or something and make it something that is they can't say no. Because you can say, well, look, in some instances, I don't like to see this done, but I know it has been done. You were over at my house last Saturday morning, weren't you? Yeah. Well, I saw you peeking in my daughter's bedroom. And wait.
They're blackmailing people?
No, they're not doing that.
I don't call it blackmail. I would never call it blackmail. I would just simply say you're cinched in tight. You're a member of the family. And
that's not being a member of the family. You were at my house last Saturday, and I saw you peeking in my daughter's bedroom. What's that supposed to mean?
It means, hey, you're a boy. You sure are. You get around my house, don't you? So I guess you're going to be producing. You're going to be directing that movie, right? And
it's blackmail.
No, it's not blackmail, Phil. Look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Don't you think I'd recognize blackmail?
Well, in this instance, Doug, I don't think you're recognizing blackmail. If you say to a man, "You were at my house last Saturday. I saw you peeking in my daughter's bedroom. You really get around my house, don't you?"
Yeah.
You don't think that's blackmail?
You don't think that is blackmailing, man?
I would not call that blackmail so much as I would say, it's almost like a shotgun wedding. And you're saying, okay, now you were at my house, and I saw you open the bathroom door and look my wife, really give my wife a good look as she was climbing into a bathtub. And she was climbing into that bathtub very, very awkwardly, if you know what I mean.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
What does that mean, she was climbing into the bathtub awkwardly?
Well, I mean, if your wife or anyone you know gets into the bathtub in a really dumb, awkward, like they're lifting their leg up really high and they're sliding their butt down on the obviously you're going to get, it's going to be a better view than you would of someone who knows how to get into a bathtub like a normal human being and doesn't have, any kind of a motor sensory problem. So,
Oh, baby.
All right, Phil, I got better things to do than this bullcrap.
Oh, you know something, man.
Phil, they're your friends.
They're not my friends, they're my guests.
Yeah, but you found these people. Most sensitive people that I ever seen.
Yeah, every time you have one of them on, you make one joke or laugh at them, they're all like, oh, and they hang up and everything.
Yes, they do. And I think it's time to either fish or cut bait on this Danger. Danger is no good. He's no good, I'm telling you. Danger, I think he's played out.
What do you mean, played out?
He gets all upset. First of all, he thinks he's the greatest thing in the world, and he's still stuck at that lousy little newspaper. He thinks being gay and being a gay, he's talking about, we now live in a day and age, Phil, where gay marriage is becoming acceptable. People are slowly accepting. Doug doesn't have to run around beating his chest on this. His act is over. It's stale. Don't you agree, Bud Dickman?
I do, Miss Gray.
Robert?
Yeah, I gotta go with it.
And I make three. You're outvoted.
Oh, really? Because whose name is on the show?
Phil.
Whose name is on the show?
Phil Hendry.
Margaret?
Yes, Phil Hendry.
Okay. I make those calls.
You make those calls in concert with David G. Hall. We can get him on the phone.
We'll get him on the phone when I say, all right?
Aha. Uh-huh. So you don't want to talk to him because you're afraid he'll vote with us.
No, I don't want to talk to him because I don't want to hear him arguing with Daphne about how she needs another box of crullers and she's jumping out of the car with it still moving at 40 miles an hour and we never do get to talk about what we want to talk about. So no, I don't want to talk to him right now.
You don't want to talk to... Don't look at me like that.
I'm going to look at you. I'm running this show. And as long as I'm running this show...
It's on your nose.
There's nothing wrong with my nose. I'm pointing to myself.
Get out of here.
So that's how it is, huh? Doug Danger's played out. Are you listening to this, Doug? Wow, man, that's a cold shot.
Well, I mean, think about it. The guy's all gay, gay. Okay, that's good. I don't have nothing against no gay. And
well, you used to.
So I don't know more. And another thing, you know, it's played out, man.
He's all in.
He's all in. I mean, what do you want me to do? You want me to just can his appearance on the show?
I think you have to tell him to tone it down, because if he keeps saying gay, everybody's just going...
They're just going to say, you know what, Phil? You're played out.
Will you knock it off with this played out thing? All right, well, I'm not firing Doug, so you just give that up, okay?
But, Mr. Henry, you don't understand.
I said I'm not firing Doug, so forget it. I'll let him know what your concerns are. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it, you know, talking to him, but I certainly am not going to fire him. Ain't gonna happen. Now then, the Farley brothers revealed earlier this year that they were planning a proper Dumb and Dumber follow-up, unlike the widely despised 2003 sequel Dumb and Dumberer When Harry Met Lloyd, which the filmmakers were not actually involved with. How the much despised, why would they say that?
Well, I think it's because the film did not have Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. I think it's because the film was not funny. It was ill-conceived. It didn't have the Farley brothers. In other words, it was made for all the wrong reasons. And the people that greenlit it, I'm sure, are eating out of a soup can now.
I doubt that.
You doubt that. Well, whoever greenlit that turd in a punch bowl, I hope they are at least experiencing some discomfort. I don't know what that could be. Sitting on a nail gun. Hemorrhoids the size of a golf ball. Something.
All right. Sitting on a nail gun. Anyway, however, they've essentially been too preoccupied with their passion project, next year's Three Stooges movie, over the past several months to give a sequel much additional thought. Well, now, next year's Three Stooges, so in other words, there is, another Three Stooges movie, or have you pulled up an article... This is from a year ago, you jackass.
Oh.
You clown.
Phil, you're always doing that.
I didn't do that. Bud did.
But yeah, but that's really good.
Why?
Because it gives you an idea that what you said last week is true, that it sucks, and they're not going to do it, and that's how they felt a year ago.
I don't know.
Well, just use it that way.
Yeah, well, 1 year ago, they really had high hopes for Dumb and Dumber 2, but guess what? It ain't going to happen, because you heard us say last week that Warner Brothers, I think, is the producing studio, and they think the thing is a real piece of garbage, and they're not going to do it. But a year ago, they had high hopes. Next year's Three Stooges movie.
I didn't know.
Next time, take a look at the dates on these things.
Well, why is something that's a year old there?
I don't know. So we're going to, what do you got? Okay, so David Hall, you know, I try to keep him out of this thing. I'm telling you, man. I don't need him. Hey, David, I guess you got, I guess I'm roped into this.
Well, I think it's a good question, Phil. You know, I think Doug Danger is a very good addition to the show. I think he always has been. But I think Danger has been hyping that gay man, gay journalist. And now you've eroded your position even more by reading a story about Dumb and Dumber that's a year old and trying to foist it off on Dickman. So I think your position at this particular time is becoming compromised. And
wait a minute, man. There's no compromise of any position.
Well, did you not just read a story that was a year old about Dumb and Dumber, and now you're saying that this guy, that Dickman and this guy, what's his name, Margaret Gray...
What do you mean, guy? What's his name?
I'm sorry. The lady, Ms. Gray and Robert, are you saying that they're played out and you're not?
What is with the played out?
We saw Wyatt Earp last night.
Okay, good for you. I'm telling you that I do not believe that Doug is... I'm asking you about this whole... My position has become compromised.
Well, you're reading a story It's over a year old.
I did make the mistake of...
Yeah, you made the mistake, all right. You read the story. Dickman's an idiot. Everybody knows that.
See, Phil, if you read a story that's a year old about Dumb and Dumber, that makes you dumb. You're so dumb.
You can't even read a story about a dumber.
Yes, because of the dumbness that you are.
Yeah, I got to agree with that.
Well, all right, Mr. I'm going to try to take Mr. Henry's side here, okay?
Go ahead, Robert.
I think Mr. Henry is not dumb. He he's dumb enough to rely on Dickman, but even Dickman knows nobody should be that dumb, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And yet, you gave him a story about Dumb and Dumber and make Mr. Henry dumb. You could.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot for the good effort, Robert. But what's happening here, I can see what's happening here, is that David and everybody else is attempting to, you know, they're attempting to twist this thing around.
I'm not twisting anything around, Phil. No, 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 no. You got the fresh meat, buddy, okay? I mean, you're telling me that this guy Danger's just in from the world and you want these two to go out on patrol tonight? No, 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 no. You got the fresh meat.
What are you quoting Platoon for?
I don't know. It just felt like a good quote. But I'll tell you this much. If you're going to get on the air and start talking about this movie that's coming out called Dumb and Dumber, and guess what? That story's a year old, and the movie is now stillborn, and oh, yeah, Three Stooges has already been out, and the story you're reading says we're anticipating the movie. Phil, you're dumber than the movie Dumb and Dumber. That's what I'm trying to say. Phil Hendry, dumber than Dumb and Dumber.
Well, you can use it on the website.
And what has that got to do with Doug Danger?
Margaret just said something to you.
I don't care. I'm talking to you. What has that got to do with Doug Danger?
I think your position is now compromised in appraising whether Doug Danger is worthy of the show. Here's a guy that comes on. He's gay. He's gay. He's gay, 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 gay. He's gay until the gay cows come home. He's got the gay thumb up. Everything's gay with him. Isn't there anything that isn't gay? Can't we live in a world where there's no, you know, gay? How about just homosexual? I would allow him back on the show if he would say, I'm a homosexual man and a homosexual journalist.
You what?
I'm just trying to change it up so the audience doesn't fall asleep with this guy.
I'm a homosexual man and a homosexual...
journalist.
It's not a bad thought.
No, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
What about I'm a sissy?
No. I'm not just for your kicks. I'm not going to take it the other way, okay?
Take it the other way?
What are you talking about? Gay sex?
What?
Yeah, you're sitting there. I'm not taking it the other way.
Oh, will you grow up? I'm talking about Danger and what he describes himself as or does not describe himself as. Doug Danger is a unique talent. He always has been. He always will be. He's going to stay on this show. I don't give a damn what anybody says. Be a smartass all you want.
Oh, no. Great speech. Hey, Daphne, what do you think? See, she loved it. So,
all right, thanks a lot, David.
Don't you hang up on me.
All right, we'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. So Doug Danger, homosexual man and homosexual journalist. That's going to be great. We'll be right back with more. World-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Truth
get a backstage
is
pass.
Our bitch.
And look
the
at all
Phil
these
Hendry
groovy
Show.
Things, man, that we've been doing. Yeah. All right. Back here with David G. Hall, Vice President of Syndication. So I hung up on you prematurely because you now feel that something I said on the air...
You can get to it any time today, Phil.
You know, don't get with the smart ass.
Well, you said that you wanted to tell me... Let me see what I said to him, ladies and gentlemen, was simply this. A few moments ago, I heard you allude to the fact that you cross-dressed. Now, I know you're a three-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. But I don't know how that's going to play when it finally gets out into the advertising community. Now, Danger is a bridge to the LGBT, however you say it.
LGBT.
LB.
You know, you guys do that on purpose, you know that?
Wait a minute. I know how to do it. LGBT.
Yeah.
Okay, then do it.
What?
Do what Phil just Brad Dickman. I want to know if you know how to do it. If you don't know how to do it, then I feel better.
LGB&B.
LGB&B. Boy, even I know it, isn't that? It's LGBB. I don't know what it is.
LGBT.
Well, anyway, Danger is a guy that can, he can bridge that gap. He can bridge us to that community. Now, if he can cool that out, then we can probably keep him, you know, on board. But we got to do something. Gay man, gay man, gay man. If he could just call himself an LGBT man, an LGBT
See, you know how to do it.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about business. LGBT man and an LGBT journalist.
Get him on the phone, will you?
Who?
Doug Danger. Who do you think?
Yeah, get Danger on the phone and then get on the line Harvey Weierman, because I need a legal opinion on this thing, okay? And I think, Phil, we may have a solution to some problems here, because we've been hearing for, you know, an awful lot from people in recent days about this, that, something else. You know, they got a pain in the rear end of this, they got a pain in the rear end of that. And I just want to make sure I know. Okay.
All right. I don't know what you just said.
Right.
Hey, Doug?
Yeah, Doug Danger here. Hey, Doug, this is David G. Hall. How you been? Yeah, I'm fine. All right, come on. Don't be, you know, don't have, you still got, you frosted over that whole thing?
Yeah, no, I'm frosted over what I just heard on the radio about how you think I'm played out as a gay man, gay journalist. Let me tell you something, my man. I'm not calling myself a homosexual man, a homosexual journalist.
I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you if you will consider you being a LBDB. Damn.
LGBT, you want me to call myself an LGBT man and an LGBT journalist?
No, I don't want you to call yourself an LGBT man. I want you to say it in a fluid way.
That's what I mean, man. You want me to say it fluidly?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I don't know, man. I don't think that has... Phil, what do you think?
I think it sounds very, very awkward. I don't think anybody says it that way.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Phil. Thanks for backing me up. Thank you for making this easier. I'm so grateful for you making it easier.
You know something? At least he's being honest, all right? He's being honest, and he's saying what I'm telling you, which is, come on, I'm Doug Danger, an LGBT man, an LGBT... Oh, get out of here.
But all I'm asking is that you try it. Look, Doug, we got a problem. And the problem starts with P and ends with L, and that stands for Henry.
What did he do?
He dressed up in a fur, in a mink, and in a fur. He dressed up like he was going out on the town when he was three. Lipstick and everything.
You got to... I'll see you guys on the other side, okay?
The other side of what? The gender line? Or...
Get out of here. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Dressed up like he was going out for the evening.
Phil Hendry.
Very, very significant.
Well, you know, you really want to be careful how you when you say to people. And I had an ex. I'm not going to call her an ex girlfriend. She is. Well, how do I put this? She was this chick that I knew. And
well, did you have sex with her and everything?
That's none of your business. Okay.
I think that's a yes.
Excuse me. Anyway, it ended badly because. I tried to dump this chick two or three times.
Where was this, man?
Down in Florida, okay? So just this, I tried to dump her two or three times, and finally she, you know, we just it called it off, okay? And it ended really, and it was one of these people, I knew this broad, excuse me for saying this, folks, but in her case, whatever, I knew she was like a psychopathic. I mean, seriously, no there, you know, just a big empty nothing. Anyway, this chick, you know, some people roll out the cliches and then other people, you hope for something better because she was hanging around with me for a while. So I thought, well, maybe some of my genius, and I'm saying that with facetious, you know, facetiously, however, maybe some of my wit and my charm, rubbed off on her. Well, no, because one of the shots she took at me at the end was, old man. I love that. Now, this is a chick, excuse me for saying, she's pushing 40.
Well, you didn't say that to her.
No, I should have. Because you don't want to say that to a woman. Obviously, that's going to really slam their vanity a little bit, although she probably thinks she's like, I mean, to some common hillbilly, she's probably Marilyn Monroe. Okay, let me put it that way. But sorry, baby, you know, I was married to the homecoming queen, okay? So I know how all that goes. But the fact is, in other words, beautiful women are fine, but you know what? Beauty fades, and like I said, don't call me old man when you're knocking on 40's door, and if I may say, she has a tendency to drink her lunch.
Oh, man, she could sue you.
No, I'm not saying who it is. I haven't said her name. The whole reason why I'm bringing it, Margaret wanted me to bring it up. The old man thing, right?
Yes, you got really angry at that.
Of course. It's such a cliche. You know, it's the one area you can't use the N-word. You can't say anything about women. You can't this, can't that, but you can go ahead and slam some guy for being old. Now, let me tell you something. Being my age, which is the big six, okay, if that's old, okay, that's fine. But the fact is, I'm still hustling. And hustling better than most cats that are half my age. I'm not trying to say anything here. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not better than anybody else. But the fact is, I'm still, I'm still playing the game, man, you know, and I'm playing it to win and making a better living today, damn sure, than I was, say, 5 years ago when everything was just, I mean, the whole economy was in the tank. And negotiated the purchase of my own company. I'm back, you know, with ownership, making a good living. Yeah, there's a big, you know, I just got a bill for, well, I better not say, you know.
Phil, we don't want to hear about the bills you're getting. I just wanted to hear about this whole old man. So did you say to her that you're some old skank pushing 40, trolling Facebook for men? And
No, will you watch it? No, I did not. I should have, because it would have been true. But no, the only thing was the old man thing. So if you're, you know, old and they're laying that on you, you can always come back with a couple of things. I always like to say things like, for instance, I got enough money right now I could drop in front of this chick and she would do anything I asked her to do.
Oh, man, that's, you know.
Spit it out, man.
Yeah, what are you trying to say? That's like calling her a prostitute.
Well, it is, Phil.
Well, it's true. It's true. I have enough bread right now. I could drop right in front of somebody like that, and she would be so overcome by that. She would do anything. Now, that's something that comes with age. I realize that there's a lot of guys that are younger than me that can say the same thing, but it generally speaking, is something that an older guy can say. You know, just think of that. Think of that for a minute. You could lay on somebody enough bread that they may say that you're this, that, or something else, but you know what? At the end of the day, I can buy your ass. I could give you money that would so overwhelm you, you would do anything I asked.
Anything?
Well,
like, you're not going to get somebody. I don't care how much money you pay me. You'd probably be with a guy.
All right, I'm not doing Fear Factor, so forget it, okay? I'm just making a point here. You know, I'm making a point. You know, one of the things you can say, some guy was laying into me when we were having these debates about Joe Stacks, some clown. I had been over on the Joe Stacks page, and, you know, I was mixing it up with the people over there. And this guy's all, yeah, Henry, this, that. And he laid the old guy thing on me. And I looked at this guy's page. Now, he was selling T-shirts. He was silk screening and selling T-shirts out of his mobile home. Now, if you don't want me to put down what a guy's doing for a living, well, then you can't start in with the old man thing because, man, that fair game after that. So I said to this guy, how's that T-shirt business, man? And that you got a very hot wife, by the way, dude. And is she really happy being married to a T-shirt salesman? And he's all, yeah, Henry, you know, she's happy enough with me. You think she's going to be happy with you? I said, tell you what, man, I bet you I could buy her a car and she'd leave you.
Oh, you didn't say that.
Yes, I did. Why not? Why can't I? If you're going to play in the mud, if you're going to say, not in the mud, but if you're going to say, you're an old guy, all right, then guess what? Guess what being an old guy brings you? So you got a very hot-looking wife, which he did. I said, she is very beautiful, man. I said, well, you know what? I bet you all I got to do is buy her a car, and she'd be gone like that. And he's all, yeah. Boy, that pissed him off. But you know what? If you can't,
if you can't stand the heat, then you can't take it.
That's not how it goes, man.
So if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
No.
Yes. Don't tell me no, bud. There's one thing I hate you saying no. If you can't stand the heat, get out of it. What do you mean, if you can't stand the heat, you can't take it?
That doesn't mean anything, bud.
Yeah, it does. You can't stand the heat, then you can't take it.
Yeah, okay, man. So
you always do that. You never give me a chance.
Because you sound dumb, man. Here's some new news, by the way. James Gandolfini, details are emerging in the sudden death of Soprano actor James Gandolfini, who passed away Wednesday in Rome at the age of 51. Dr. Claudio Modini, head of the emergency department at the Policino Umberto Hospital in Rome, confirmed to the New York Times that Gandolfini died of cardiac arrest. When he arrived, he was already in cardiac arrest. He was put under resuscitation treatment for 40 minutes, but the emergency staff failed to restart his heart, and at 2300, he was pronounced deceased. That would be 11 o'clock, said Dr. Modini, 11 p.m., who did not personally treat the actor. Via telephone, he was talking, adding that he could have been deceased on arrival since he was already in cardiac arrest. Modini also told the Associated Press that in accordance with Italian law, an autopsy would be conducted 24 hours after his death. On Thursday, a family friend identified as Michael Kobold, I believe it says, spoke to reporters at a news conference at Rome's hotel, at the hotel where Mr. Gandolfini had been staying when he was stricken. Last night at approximately 10 p.m., James Gandolfini, while on vacation in Rome, experienced a medical emergency, Mr. Kobold said in a prepared statement. The hotel notified the emergency crews, who responded, and first aid was administered before Mr. Gandolfini was taken to a hospital where he died of an apparent heart attack. Our prayers and condolences go to his family and friends.
Now, you know, I don't want to say anything, Phil, but do you think there'll be a big stink about whether they, you know, the ambulance arrived?
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, they'll probably make a big stink.
No, they won't. How do you know they'll probably make a big stink?
You don't know, because it was Italians and everything.
What about it?
They know how to. They know what they're doing?
Yeah, they know what they're doing. What do you mean, do they know what they're doing? Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Well, you just don't know.
Wait a minute. Just because it ain't America doesn't mean that the doctors don't know what they're doing.
No, I know that, but they're Italians and everything.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well,
what does it mean?
I think you know what it means.
No, I don't know what it means. What does it mean?
Italians are the ones that they joined Hitler.
They joined Hitler?
Yeah.
And that means what?
They could drop the ball when it comes to EMT.
I can't even begin to see the connection between these things.
Come on, Mr. Henry, wake up and smell a coffee. If the Italian...
You shut up, all three of you, before I flip my lid. They helped Hitler.
Well, it's something to consider.
No, it's not. Okay, so that's the news. And apparently his teenage son found him. So that's rough all the way around, man. Great actor, brought great joy to so many people. I was very sad that when I saw that news, it blew me away and it bummed me out, because I very, very, very much admired him. Every time I saw him. All right.
You mean like just walking down the street?
No, when I saw him on the screen. We'll be right back. It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We still need Harvey Wireman back here, along with Doug Danger, along with David G. Hall, as we talk with Doug about changing his handle to I'm an LGBT man and an LGBT journalist. I don't think it's going over too good, but we'll see. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, where if you're not listening to us on the radio, you can also, with a backstage pass, watch and listen to us on our website. So there's no real excuse for missing the Phil Henry Show and the many marvelous theatrics that we provide. James Gandolfini, we are not. We would never even begin to try to, you know, say that. However, we, in our own meager way...
All right, Phil, enough with the phony humility.
Phony humility? Anyway, welcome back to the program. On the line with me, we've got a plethora, a grouping of people here. Doug Danger is rejoining us here from Orange County. Harvey Wireman is with us from San Marino. We do have David G. Hall from his home in South Pasadena. And I think we are going to have one more person. I'm not sure yet. But David and Harvey and Doug, who are we missing? Oh, and yeah, David, Harvey, Doug. All right. Anyway, gentlemen, David, I want to start with you, okay? You want Doug to change the handle from gay man to gay gay man and gay journalist to LGBT man and LGBT journalist. Why?
Phil, thank you very much. This is David G. Hall, the Vice President of Syndication on the Phil Hendry Show. I want to ask Doug to consider calling himself an LGBT man and an LGBT woman. Not a woman, LGBT man and a journalist.
Okay, this is Doug Danger. I think I know what my handle is.
I don't want to be contentious, Doug.
Neither do I. But I will tell you right now, it's a stupid idea.
Can I enter in here, Phil? Can I enter into a...
No, hold on for a minute. I want David to finish.
Yeah, I'll be done, Harvey, and then I want you to consider, Doug, only because we've got people who have been calling this evening saying that they heard that Phil, yes, he was 3 years old, yes, his sisters dressed him up as a woman, but they'd feel more comfortable with Phil if he would just quit leaning on everything gay, gay, gay. You know, he's backing up the gay. Phil is a great guy, and Phil is a fair-minded man. But you couple the information that he was wearing high heels and, you know, putting on perfume and going out for the evening.
Now, wait, hold on for just a minute, okay?
I want to jump in if I could. Wait, let me finish, all right?
No, you're not going to finish. I was 3 years old. I'm not going out for the evening.
I said like you're going out for the evening. That's all. And so we would feel comfortable, Doug, if in light of this new information...
These were my sisters.
Oh, hold on. Doug, we would feel comfortable in light of this new information if you would say, hi, I'm Doug Danger. I'm a gay... How do you say it?
You know, Mr. Hall, I think what you're asking me... I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, okay, buddy?
No, I know that. There's no reason to start muscling me.
I'm not going
to
muscle you. I'm just going to say, you want me to say I'm an LGBT man, an LGBT woman, not a woman, the LGBT.
What do you say? You say you're a gay man and a gay.
And a gay journalist.
Hold on, Phil. No one's talking to you right now.
Look, I want to jump in.
Hold on, will you, Wireman?
Hey, you don't call me Wireman Hall, okay?
I'm sorry, Harvey. Doug, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. And LG, I'm a gay man and a gay woman. Is that right?
Gay journalist.
Bill, I'm not talking to you right now, if you don't mind. What is it?
Phil's right. It's called, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
So Phil is right.
Yeah.
All right, Phil. So you were right.
Was I really?
I'm not talking to you. I'm just telling you that...
Yes, you are talking to me.
But I'm not asking you to talk back. So the gay man and gay... So what I'm asking is what, Harvey? Please advise.
You're asking... Well, first of all, you're the dumbest bastard the world has ever known, Hall. That's the number one thing I want to say.
All right, yeah, finally, yeah. Woo!
And one more thing, Hall.
Are you talking to me?
If your name's Hall, and I think it is, then yes, I am talking to you.
The dumbest bastard, huh?
You are absolutely one of the dumbest clods that has ever been scooped up in the midst of the re-plowing of a field. You are a dumb... Dumb. Oh, God, are you dumb? Oh.
Harvey, you there?
I think he hung up or he passed out.
Well, I'll tell you something right now. Yeah, Mr. Wireman, thank you very much for that.
You there?
Harvey, are you there?
I dropped the phone. It took me a while to reach down and get it. I had to get out of the chair and get down on my hands and knees and get way down to where the phone was and then lift it up and... And it's taken all this time.
I understand. All right. Phil, so Doug, that's a big no, huh?
No, it's not a big no. If you really want me to say I'm an LGBT man, LGBT woman.
No, not woman. I said journalist.
I'm sorry, yeah, LGBT. Okay, see, even now I'm butchering it. I think it's a bad idea because it's clumsy. It takes too much time to say. I don't think anybody's going to identify with it. And
why don't you just back off of the gay man and gay journalist thing?
No, I will not. Even though Phil dressed,
Even though I was a 3-year-old boy dressed up as a woman because my sisters dressed me up that way. No, that shouldn't intimidate Doug at all.
I want to jump in if I could. You've been wanting to jump in for a long time, Wireman. Why don't you take a jump off a pier, huh?
Why, you lousy, dirty. I'm going to tell you something, Hall. I'm on my way here.
Did you get a load of that? That's a threat. Hey, Wireman. Wireman.
What's he doing?
He says he's coming over to my house. Wireman.
Harvey, you there?
All right, so, you know, you think I'm going to be afraid of an old man? I want to ask you something, Doug. What about I'm a homosexual man, a homosexual nurse, or whatever you say you are.
I'm going to say this the last time to you, okay? I'm a gay man or a homosexual man and a gay...
Hold on for a minute. Yeah, who's there?
I got a delivery of flowers. Flowers, hold on for a minute.
Hello?
Oh, God.
Tell me that, huh?
Hello?
I'm here.
No, no, is David?
Phil, it's me, it's Harvey.
Where's Hall?
I trussed him up with some length of rope that I've got, and I've got him in the bathtub. It's getting harder. Every year I do that.
Every year you do that, huh?
Yeah, well, he's fine. Hey, Hall, say something. Yeah.
Well, what did you do?
What do you think I did? I shut him up. Hey, Hall, what's your opinion about it now? What?
On a horse?
Yeah, you're a mumbling, stuttering jackass. You know that? Well, how about if I turn the shower on you, huh?
Doing a booty, baby.
What?
Doing a booty.
What are you? I don't know what he's saying. It sounds like something important. Should I take the masking tape off of his face?
I don't. Yeah. Yes. Of course.
All right. Go ahead. I said you're gonna have your ass in a sling if you. It wasn't anything important.
All right. Well, it looks like this has devolved into the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life, Doug. It looks like you can hold on to your handle, gay man, gay journalist. Okay.
Well, Phil, I appreciate that very much.
Shut your hole.
Phil, I appreciate that very much. Could you turn, hey Harvey? Could you turn him down, or turn you down, or just turn your whole world down, or something? Because I'm trying to say something. I'm a gay man, gay journalist.
I understand what you are, Danger. Hey, Hall. Hey, Hall. I'm poking him with a broom handle. Where do you keep the beer in this dump? I know it's in a refrigerator. I'm going to go to the refrigerator.
That's generally where the beer would be.
I keep mine in the garage. Oh. Aha, here it is. Look at this crap. Scotch brand and Myers. Jesus, you are really scraping the bottom of the barrel, Hall. Yeah, well.
All right, we'll take a break. Thank you very much, gentlemen. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Got it. That's pretty cool, though.
Here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, legacies are generally determined after the fact, written by others, imposed on the subject, without their input. For the last 3 years, LeBron James has endured daily revisions to his legacy, a chorus of critics framing his career based on a single game, a single series, the shots that swished and those that missed, never waiting for a fuller picture to emerge. This is, by the way, the writing of Howard Beck in the New York Times. James at last seized control of his own narrative on Thursday night, leaving nothing to chance and no more room for debate. He drove hard, he shot brilliantly, scored every critical basket, and finally pushed the Miami Heat past the San Antonio Spurs for a 95-88 victory in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. For me, I can't worry about everybody's I can't worry what everybody says about me, James said on the championship stage, the red and white confetti raining all around him, the crowd shrieking in agreement. A year after securing his first title, James claimed his second with a 37-point, 12-rebound finale, closing out a taut series against the Spurs, who were seeking their fifth title with Tim Duncan. It's a great, great basketball team. It's a great basketball city and a terrific franchise, the San Antonio Spurs. And, of course, Tim Duncan is on his way to the Hall of Fame. He missed a big layup in the game yesterday.
Which one?
I don't know. It was one of the layups they were talking about. It's kind of the difference. There it is. Therein is the rub, as Shakespeare said. You know, in great games, man, in great games, you're there or you're not. You make the shot or you don't. It doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't mean that you don't belong in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean you're not a great player. But, you know, I read this biography of Ted Williams, and Ted Williams was always burned by the fact that Joe DiMaggio was the guy, you know. And the fact is, Joe DiMaggio hit home runs in World Series. Ted Williams hit a home run in an All-Star game. That was really exciting back in the days when All-Star games were really, really big. But he never hit a home run in a World Series. And that's why he wasn't Joe DiMaggio. And that's why Ted Williams, a great hitter, no question, but no one will ever, ever, ever call Ted Williams not really a champion because his teams were not championship teams. Anyway, the Heat joined the LA Lakers as the only team to repeat in the post-Jordan era. They did it by becoming just the fourth team to win Game 6 and 7 at home after facing a 3-2 deficit. Duncan, one of the greatest big men to ever play the game, lost in the finals for the first time in his 5 appearances and perhaps bowed off of this stage for a final time. At 37, he might not get another chance.
Oh, Tim Duncan's 30. Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played till what age? Don't say anything, Robert or Bud.
Well, what, is this a test?
I just want to know.
Kareem played to 40, I think.
Well, he played, if you call that playing.
Yeah, I call that playing. What's that supposed to mean, if you call that playing? Yeah, I think he played to 40. I'm not sure.
Because I know that George Blanda played much longer.
He played football.
Yeah, he didn't play basketball.
He didn't play basketball?
No.
Why do I think George Blanda played basketball?
Maybe because you don't know nothing about it.
Oh, is that it, Bud? Thank you very much. I don't know nothing about it. I'll tell you something. My father coached baseball. He managed basketball.
Well, he managed baseball and he coached basketball.
What? What?
You don't manage basketball. You manage baseball.
I think I'll manage.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? All three of you guys can park it way up there along with your heads and everything.
Paper towels?
Please.
So, yeah, you know, 37 is kind of getting in basketball, but, hey, you know, you never know. These cats nowadays, everybody's in such fantastic shape. I think you're going to see more and more guys playing into their 40s in certain sports, you know. The idea of playing into one's 40s in hockey, I mean, I remember, you know, watching hockey games, I think there's still cats that play in their 40s. Some guys can play into their 40s in hockey. Some cats can still play in baseball. Pitchers can continue to play in baseball into their 40s. Football, we do have the example of George Blanda, and we have the occasional kicker. The most astounding 40-year-old, in my opinion, to ever play in pro football was Darryl Green, who hit the 40-year mark as a cornerback. Now, that's a defensive back. That's a guy that's backpedaling for most of the game, and you've got to be fast. And so that was amazing to me that Darryl Green made it to that age. So basketball, I don't know. Kareem, and maybe Tim Duncan, who knows? But that's a physically demanding sport.
Yeah, well, football physically demanding too.
You lisp, man.
I know football is physically.
You can't do that.
He can do anything he wants. Okay.
Yeah, he's saying football physically.
I'm trying to do it right, man. Football physically. Forget it.
Football's physically demanding.
Yeah,
it is. It's a very physically demanding sport. It'll beat the hell out of you, but there are guys that have, you know, and Bland is the most famous of the 40-year-olds, but there's been other guys. So I think it depends on all of your conditioning and how well you, you know, it's just how well you take care of yourself. I mean, it's just that simple. I know that they say the life expectancy is longer for men and women now, but still, man, if you don't take care of yourself, your ass is, you know, and I'm not, you know, getting back to James Gandolfini, I'm not saying anything about him. He was a big man. I don't know if he ever had a treadmill. I don't know the history of his particular situation. Was there a heart attack in his family? Did he have regular physicals? I know you have to have a physical before you start a show, a television show, because they're insuring you. But they're not really that in-depth, those physicals.
No, I'm back from the toilet, by the way.
Are you really?
Yes, Phil, don't be a smartass, all right? I will not sit here and be mocked. But if you're talking about entertainment, I wiped very quickly and came back.
Oh, man, we don't have to know that.
Margaret.
I'm just telling you, it's not that big. I wiped quickly. And by the way, where are the seat covers? I won't sit on that toilet seat without seat covers, bud.
I don't know. What are those?
Seat covers. Women like them.
Yes, women like them. I will not sit on that diseased toilet seat without seat covers. Do you have Lysol spray?
Do we have to talk about this right now?
Anyway, I was going to say, James Gandolfini, yes, they do get physicals. I've been there, I know. My husband, Frank, was a producer. But. What was I going to say?
You were going to say the physicals?
Yes. They're not very thorough. Although I know that when I was temporarily hired by Big Valley to play Audra's sister, I was given a fairly thorough physical.
Well, what did it entail?
There was the chest, heart. There was a rectal exam that they used a tube for. I requested that, though. I'm going to punch
it. Hey. Ow!
You think that funny?
What do you mean you requested it?
Wait a minute. That kid was laughing at me.
Yeah, and you took a shot on him.
That's none of your business. They had physicals, and I said, what do they entail? And they said this and that. And I said, what about the tube? And they went, sure. They kind of gave me a weird look, but I said to them, it's none of your business.
What is it? Well, Margaret, what kid, you don't want to tell us?
Don't give me a look like I'm a freak.
Well, what? You said that you had a physical, you had a rectal exam with a tube.
Yes.
That you requested.
You know what, I'm...
She's going to the bathroom again. Maybe that's why.
Maybe.
Okay.
I thought only guys get that.
That's what I thought. All right.
Maybe Margaret's the guy.
I heard that.
Never mind. So, yeah, James Gandolfini, getting back to the late, great actor, that's a cat that probably should have had, just given the man's overall, just the general condition of him physically, from what I could see on the TV show, he looked like he was carrying some extra weight that maybe he could do without. Although I have to tell you, that was the character, you know. What would he look like, Tony Soprano look like, without that gut? I don't know.
Well, just because you're Italian mafia don't mean you got to have the gut on you.
Yeah, he don't want to put his health in jeopardy.
Well, you should have a treadmill test, and he should have had one. You get to a certain age, you have to have a treadmill test where they hook you up to the EEG.
What's that?
EEG is an electroencephalograph. Oh, no, excuse me, EKG. I'm sorry, electrocardiograph. Electrocardiograph, as opposed to an EEG, which is for the brain. That's a electroencephalograph that reads brainwaves. But an EKG on the treadmill registers your relative heart condition, and so you need that, and, you know, a regular physical. But even that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. I've heard of more guys, they come out of having a physical, they're fantastic, everything's great, the doctor gives them the thumbs up, hey, yeah, you're looking good. 2 days later, the guy dies. I mean, there was a story, very famous story, of a runner in the 70s. This guy was a big-time runner. He wrote a book about running. He was the guru of running. He, you know, the diet this and the diet that and the water this and the carbohydrates that. And this guy was Mr. Health. He croaked from a heart attack.
What, the runner?
Yeah.
They ought to be able to, he should be able to sue, well, not him, but can't they sue?
Sue what? Sue who?
Well, if you're a runner and you die of a heart attack, you ought to be able to sue.
Yeah, who are you going to sue, man?
You can sue, like...
Yeah, who are you going to sue, bud?
You can sue the people that make the gym equipment and stuff.
You're going to sue the guy that makes the gym equipment? What do you mean?
Like the guys that make the shoes and everything.
You're going to sue the cat that makes the shoe because, by the way, your family's going to do it, right?
What?
You can't. You're dead.
Yeah, I mean, the family should.
And they're going to sue the guy that makes the running shoes because their family member died of a heart attack running. How is it that the running shoe company is responsible?
I'm just saying, if you die of a heart attack after you've been eating greens and broccoli and everything and rainwater.
Come on, man. Spit it out, will you?
I'm spitting it out. That you ought to be able to... How about if you sue the broccoli people?
Bud, give it up while you're ahead, okay, man?
I don't think he's ahead.
Just quit while you're ahead, man, okay? Sue the broccoli people. Bud, you know what you are? You're a guy that's the product of a society that has been sue-happy for a long time, so you think all problems are solved through lawsuits. Now, I believe very much in civil litigation. Very much. Very much so. It is a refuge for people who are victimized out there in the world, not necessarily as the result of a bad law or, you know, cops or whatever. These are people who have been abused by their fellow citizens, and they need a recourse to something like that. I believe in that. I do not believe that a guy croaks from a heart attack because he's been running and because he shouldn't have died from a heart attack because he's running, and his family decides they got to sue somebody, so they sue the guy that grows broccoli.
That ought to keep him getting a heart attack, though.
What?
Broccoli.
Says who?
Are you kidding me, man? A guy eat broccoli, never have no heart attack.
You know, before we talk about broccoli and running and heart attacks, you got to go back to school, man, and learn how to speak English, okay?
No heart attack with no broccoli.
Well, but still.
Still what? How do you know I wouldn't have a heart attack if all I ate was broccoli? You know that the heart attacks are hereditary? You could feed a guy broccoli until the cows came home, crapped on it, and grew more broccoli, and that cat could die of a heart attack. You want to know why?
On account of the hereditary.
Yes. That's exactly. Women who get breast cancer, same thing. All right. We're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show to close things out here on this Thursday night. Today's Friday. Today is Friday. Now, what do we got coming up this weekend, man? Are we going out to the desert or what?
I don't know. You are. Maybe you are.
I may be going out to the desert. I wanted to visit our good, close, personal friend, Johnette, out there, but she is coming into L.A., so I don't know what's going on. But we may head out to the desert. Then, of course, next week we launch Phil 2.0, baby. A new time period for the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll tell you about it when we come back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Well, yes, there's plenty that's worse in this world than a broken car wash, but just as everyday things go, what's much worse than a busted car? You're sitting in your car and the car wash is broken.
Well, you can't get out of your car.
You don't need to. This particular car wash, but yeah, there would be some car washes you wouldn't be able to get out of your car. You'd have to call. I'm reminded of that one scene, I don't know who it was and what movie, but the guy gets out of his car and has to put up his umbrella because his car wash is broken. I forget which movie it is, but there's a car wash up the street from my house that I have used a couple of times. Every time it's busted.
What do you do?
Well, I just drive out of it because it's one of those car washes where the thing your car doesn't move. The thing moves, you know?
The thing moves. What thing?
The thing that is dispensing all the suds.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, it's moving. A lot of times I think I'm moving, though, because it freaks me out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like an eyeball trick or something.
You mean it's a perceptive... Yeah, okay. An eyeball trick. What is that? Anyway, this is the thing that moves. So I just pull out... Well, like two times I'm in there, and the thing is busted, and I finally said, you know, I used some choice word. No, I didn't, but I stopped going there. And then today I took a chance, because the car was just... a filthy mess, and I had to get it washed. So I took a shot. I go up there, and sure enough, it was fine. I even said to the guy, Please, does your car wash work?
Yes, sir, it's fine. Everything's great. A couple problems.
Yeah.
So your car, I saw your car, looks gorgeous, absolutely sparklingly beautiful, and I know the lease is coming up on it, isn't it?
Yeah, the lease is up on my car in, in November. Anyway, I wanted to bring this up. This is an interesting story because I was talking about stopping at the mobile snack shop there. The feds have seized 14 7-Eleven stores, get a load of this, in an ID theft case.
What? You're kidding me.
No, federal authorities seized 14 7-Eleven stores in New York and Virginia and indicted, hey, Barry, if you're listening, stay out of those 7-Elevens.
Where is she living?
She lives in Alexandria. And I know some people in Alexandria and Arlington, just, you know. Federal authorities seized 14 7-Eleven stores in New York and Virginia and indicted 9 owners and managers, charging them with stealing identities and exploiting more than 50 illegal immigrants. What a dirty, rotten thing to do. You got to be some kind of a psychopath to do stuff like that. No conscience, no empathy for people. Just a dirty, rotten thief. Farouk and Bushra Baig, a married couple who owned or managed a dozen of the convenience stores, along with 7 other owner-managers, were charged with identity theft, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and concealing and harboring illegal immigrants. Loretta Lynch, the former country singer, and now, I'm kidding, no it isn't.
Well, who's Loretta Lynch?
Loretta Lynn was the country singer. Loretta Lynch is the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York. She said, quote, from their 7-Eleven stores, the defendants dispersed wire fraud and identity theft along with Slurpees and hot dogs, Lynch said at a Brooklyn news conference. She said the 7-Eleven defendants allegedly forced the immigrants to work 100 hours a week and pocketed the majority of their pay while also forcing them to live in and pay rent in boarding houses that the defendants owned. A plantation system allegedly went on for more than 13 years.
Oh, Mike, what is with these people? That man that kept those girls for 10 years.
These are psychopaths. I'm telling you, they are psychopaths. They have no conscience, no empathy. They just see people as marks. They see everybody as an opportunity. They even see each other that way. They don't see, you know, you gotta understand, these people, when they look at another human being, they just see what do I get out of him? How can I use them? There's absolutely nothing else that they see. 10 of the stores are located on New York's Long Island, and 4 were in Virginia, according to Loretta Lynch. The stores are now operating under the district management of 7-Eleven after the authorities moved to have the franchises forfeited. The feds also seized 5 houses on Long Island owned by the defendants. Good. James Hayes, special agent in charge of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security's investigation, said federal agents are investigating an additional 40 7-Eleven stores. Fantastic. This is good work. Hey. In a statement, see, there you go. That's our tax dollars at work keeping this scum, because I'm going to tell you, if they're doing that to illegal immigrants, what's happening every time you walk in there with a credit card, Mr. and Mrs. America? Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that one, did you?
Well, Phil, I'm sure people are thinking of that.
But what's the identity with these stealing?
They're using the identities of these immigrants. They're making them work there. They're making them forfeit their pay. They're basically keeping these people captive, and the reason they're able to do it is these folks are illegal. And before people get too judgmental, these people may be working there or came into contact with these individuals because they were told, oh, we can get you your papers. Yeah, no sweat. You know, you're in a new country. You don't know how the ball game works. And they wind up being kept there as indentured servants for 13 years.
What's a indentured servant?
They ain't indentured, ma'am. I keep telling him, he keeps saying, what's a denture?
What do you mean, what's an indentured servant?
No, a denture.
It's not dentures, man. It's not dentures. It's an indentured servant is someone who works almost virtually as a slave for a period of a number of years. And then eventually, as it worked in the old days, then eventually you get your freedom. A slave never got his freedom, ever, until the master died and maybe put it in his will. But indentured servants were slaves for like 10 years. Most of the white trash that came up, well, I shouldn't say that, but most of the white trash that came over here came over as indentured servant.
Oh, well, maybe that was my great-great-great-grandfather.
Probably.
Yeah, well, yours was a slave.
Yeah, so yours was white trash, man.
All right, take it easy. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft. And join us online at philhendryshow.com for more fantastic, wonderful, and marvelous stuff at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Until 10 out of 10, let that be a lesson
to you.
Phil Hendry.